Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On yesterday's show, high school and college students joined us to discuss the state of education. And today we are speaking with teachers. According to the Institute of Education Sciences, there are almost 4 million public school teachers working in U.S. classrooms. They are responsible for shaping minds, sparking curiosity, and building the foundation of young people. It's a job that demands endless patience, relentless energy, and the capacity to care for their students. And they have to do this every single day. And yet most teachers are underpaid and overworked. The average annual salary for a starting teacher is less than $45,000. The national average pay for all teachers is less than $70,000. So it's hard not to see why there is a growing teacher shortage. Unless you've stood in front of a classroom full of restless kids, juggled countless administrative mandates, had to deal with parent expectations, testing requirements, and emotional crises, it is very hard to understand the job of a teacher. A 2023 Pew Research poll found only a third of public K-12 teachers were extremely or very satisfied with their job overall. About half say they're somewhat satisfied. 18% say they're not too or not at all satisfied with their job. And then there are the budget cuts coming from the Trump administration. And this has been head spinning because they initially said they were going to cut $6 billion from education and federal funds. And then because of an outcry from people across the board, they decided to restore over $1 billion. This is according to EdSource in an article last month. So there's a lot going on with teachers. If you are a teacher, or you've been a teacher and you'd like to weigh in on today's show, what do we need to know about what you're dealing with today? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by two educators with more than four decades of experience between them. Sanjay Makhijani is a former high school biology teacher who spent 20 years as a public educator in the Bay Area. Sanjay is currently a science teacher educator with the Exploratorium Teacher Institute in San Francisco, where he specializes in programs for teachers of color. Hi, Sanjay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Rose.
Great to have you. Alicia Sharif has been a high school English teacher in Santa Cruz County for 25 years. Hi, Alicia. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's great to have both of you. Just reading about what is happening in public schools, given that school is starting this week in so many parts of the country. I mean, the LA Times has a piece called Los Angeles Public Schools to Open with Unprecedented Protections for Immigrant Children. And then Time magazine ran a piece by Becky Pringle, president of the National Education Association. And she writes about how she hears hunger stories on a regular basis in public schools across the country. And the Republican plan to cut SNAP is going to result in about 18 million kids losing access to free school meals. So there's so much going on. And I just wonder, what are your thoughts? What do you think deserves more attention right now as school is starting? Sanjay, let's start with you.
Yes, I agree that there's unprecedented challenges right now, especially with ICE raids occurring. I think it's incredibly frightening for many families who are going to be targeted by these and profiled by these. These are not necessarily even immigrant families, let's say. These are families that may even be citizens of the United States, but it is very frightening right now. I was speaking to many teachers from Los Angeles, especially, who were saying that they just don't know what to do. Their attendance rates are extremely low. Families are afraid to come to school, to send their children to school. And many families are basically just disappearing. I spoke with one teacher who said that there's videos of one of her students' parents being abducted by ICE that has been circulating, and all of the students in the school have seen it, and they don't know how best to support these children and the families and make sure that they are feeling safe and welcome in school.
Wow. Well, this piece that just came out yesterday in the LA Times says that school police and officers from several municipal forces will patrol near some 100 schools, setting up what they're calling safe zones in heavily Latino neighborhoods. And then here in the Bay Area, there are so many stories about how staff have been trained to protect their students from ICE raids. Local News Matters Bay Area has a piece just a couple days ago called "They Are Focusing on Surviving. Fear of ICE Raids Are Keeping San Jose Students from School." So students have dropped out of summer and after school enrichment programs, opting to stay home. I mean, this is devastating. Just in Santa Clara County in January, they experienced an average drop in attendance of 5,000 students, and the number doubled to 10,000 in February. I mean, to think, Alicia, that these kids are going to summer school in these enrichment programs and they feel like they have no choice but to drop out.
It's true. If a student is feeling unsafe, which many of them are, they really struggle with what they should do. You know, should I be in school? Should I not be in school? What's more important, my learning, my safety? It's really tough. And, you know, I work in Watsonville, so we are predominantly a agricultural community, and we have yet to experience sort of the things that are happening in LA or even more in the Bay Area. And I'm nervous, I'll admit, you know, coming into this new school year, we are a community that is largely Latino. And so far as I know, students are still showing up. There's a lot of encouragement from our administrators and from our community programs for students to be coming. You will be looked out for and protected. However, we know that we see different things happening on the ground than what we were expecting. And so I will admit, I am nervous heading into the school year for my kids, for our staff, for our community.
You work in Watsonville. Do you have students whose parents are farm workers?
Absolutely. I can see the farms essentially on my drive to work all the way in. A good majority of my students have worked in the fields themselves, or do currently, and a good portion, yes, their parents are working in the fields and in a lot of different capacities that they're very nervous about.
Sanjay, what are you hearing from teachers about how they're preparing for all of this? And if you can just talk to us about how this is just another issue that teachers have to deal with. I mean, there's poverty in schools, kids are hungry, they might not have the resources that they need. I've been seeing so many backpack drives because a lot of kids just don't have the backpacks and the basic school supplies that they need. And I wonder if for people who don't have children or don't have much experience with the system, they might not really know just what is going on in classrooms today. There's just so much.
There is so much. I mean, you mentioned these basic needs that, you know, unfortunately are very predictable, like not being able to have enough supplies, and also students living below the poverty line as measured by the free and reduced lunch program. So there are, you know, huge amounts of students, say, I taught in San Francisco schools. Many schools are Title I, meaning that more than 40% of the families are below the poverty line. And that's most schools in the district, because wealthier families often put their children in private schools. So those are just some of the regular challenges that educators already expect to face. However, things are incredibly different this year, even compared to the first Trump administration. At that time, We were receiving training and advice on what to do if ICE were to enter a school. And we did feel actually protected by law enforcement. However, that's incredibly different right now. Law enforcement actually in San Francisco and in Oakland has been shown to be cooperating with ICE and sending information about families to ICE and coordinating with them. So as much as they are providing some reassurances that they actually will be on campus and protecting or forming some sort of barrier. There's no actual trust there that they actually will be protecting families, especially when they are coordinating with ICE at all sorts of levels, including, in the courtrooms, for trials. So there's a lot of fear and anxiety, and truly, teachers don't know what to do, even if they are receiving training and support.
Wow. And I'm sure that we're going to be hearing stories in the next couple of weeks because school is just starting. So it's really interesting, Sanjay, to hear about the differences between the first and the second Trump administration. What about administration in schools? What message are teachers getting from the administrators about potential ICE raids?
I think that administrators are really doing their best. They are communicating exactly what you said, that they are coordinating with law enforcement to protect families and to protect students from ICE raids. But as we see, the ICE raids are becoming more and more emboldened. Before, we were all expected to ask for warrants for arrests and for for visitations to campus. And at this point, ICE is completely ignoring those and just raiding schools. Now, this is not everywhere and all the time, but it is enough to really stoke fear and prevent a lot of families from wanting to come to school. And again, just the protocols that we have in place are really not any assurance that ICE will not actually come into classrooms and break the law and come to take students.
And it looks like, just based on a quick search, so much of this is happening in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is getting the most attention. In fact, it's getting almost all of the attention in the last month, where teachers are frightened in LA. The superintendent, LAUSD, is calling for limits on immigration enforcement activity near schools. Trump's immigration crackdown is raising fears. This is a CNN headline. There's just a lot of attention on this. Alicia, what else can you add about how this affects children's ability to learn? I know you said this hasn't affected Watsonville, but there's so much fear. Is this area next, especially when you're talking about farm worker families? What does this kind of fear do to students' ability to learn in the classroom, pay attention? And you just have to think about, what is school for? I mean, teachers are there to teach, and it's a beautiful experience. So much happens. Life-changing moments happen in the classroom. And to think that students and teachers have to think about these other issues, like a potential ICE crackdown.
Yeah, it's true. Everything that you mentioned earlier on when you were introducing this topic of all the issues that teachers sort of are faced with, beyond classroom management or, delivering great lesson plans, there is the whole gamut of emotions that a student will walk in with that we often are not privy to unless that student's willing to sort of open up. And so building trust is really, really important. I think our community in particular, it's very strong. A lot of the staff at Watsonville High School went to Watsonville High or, have grown up in Watsonville. There's a lot of tightness within the families. So there's this sense of strength there. So I do get a sense that our students feel like, okay, we're okay. However, I cannot speak for them. And before, either Trump administration, my students have always been afraid. This is not a new feeling. This has always existed for them. And now it's just much more heightened, and there is a lot more stress. And honestly, we're going to have to unpack that together as a group, but it takes time. It takes time for me to get to know my students and for me to see where people are at. And then on top of that, when you're working at a school where there's a lot of issues beyond just that, there's so many ways that my students might be struggling. And, you know, everything from, like you've mentioned, am I hungry? You know, I'm too hungry to pay attention. I'm too afraid to pay attention. And we know that the ability to learn is very reduced if you are afraid. And so being able to pick up on that, I tell my students, I say, you know, I look out in the room and I can see all of your faces. And essentially I am trying to get a sense or a pulse of where you're at. And oftentimes they can really mask their fear or even mask it to themselves. So again, it's, I think for teachers, we have to be highly trained in social emotional readiness for kids, and also understanding how kids learn. What are the kind of things that'll make them feel comfortable so that, you know, sort of the outside world is not intruding into the classroom. They can kind of forget it. But I do think that a lot of kids in my community are already not, for example, showing up to the farmer's market. Some of those folks who are selling food at the farmer's market are saying those sales are down. People aren't showing up. People are afraid. And so, this will be a new year to see what will this be like. And it won't be a conversation I'll have day one. It wouldn't necessarily be appropriate unless there is an incident. It will take some time. We have so many other issues to deal with as well. For example, one of the top things on my mind is AI, and we do not need to get into that right now. But if you were planning on pivoting there, that's a whole other topic that teens today are up against in terms of their tech use and all the fears around that too.
Right. And we can definitely talk about that later in the show. Actually, on Cross Currents, our news department here at KALW, they are airing a segment called The Homework Machine, and they're focusing on K-12 schools and how they are or are not adapting to the presence of AI in their classrooms. So we can talk about that later in the show. But Sanjay, what are some other issues you think deserve more attention?
Well, as you spoke with the students yesterday, Sangvi, Betsabe, and Leah, I think being able to talk about the war in Gaza is a big pressing issue currently. I think that, for example, in San Francisco Unified this year, at the beginning of the year, the leadership, Maria Sue, the superintendent, sent out a memo to all staff saying that they should not be discussing the war in their classrooms. But they said it, you know, they couched it by saying that they should not be discussing their own political beliefs with the students. And as the students said rightfully yesterday, that is a great underestimation of the abilities and thoughtfulness that students have through social media, through talking with their friends and family. They are very much aware about social issues. And these are students of all levels, K through 12. At different ages, they have different depth of understanding, different access to information, but they are all thinking very critically. And I think by just saying teachers should not speak about political views, we're really shutting down any sort of discourse around issues that impact our students today. And I think that that's really misguided. And I think it is a very scary and slippery slope to say that teachers should not be guiding their students, regardless of the subject that they teach, in critical analysis of the world that they live in.
This is so important. In case you missed yesterday's show, we had on three students who talked about how, because of social media, they can learn about what happened in Gaza 10 minutes ago. I mean, if there was an explosion or the shooting of people who are in desperate need of food, a lot of these students can see this in real time. And the students on yesterday's show said they really want to talk about these things in the classroom. They're very engaged, they care. And yet, as Sanjay just said, they were not allowed to. Sanjay, how do you think schools should deal with these issues? Because, gosh, in addition to having to follow the curriculum, students are bringing what's happening at home possibly into the classroom, and then they're bringing in what's happening in other countries in the classroom. We're in a very different time. I mean, when I was in school, you might have heard something on the news the night before, but you definitely didn't know what was going on in real time in other parts of the world. It was almost like we brought the newspaper to class and talked about what was in the newspaper. Very different than what we're dealing with today. And so how do you think educators should deal with this new reality that's happening in the classroom?
Well, as Alicia also said, we really need to be tapped into the social emotional state and readiness of our students. You know, I think on one hand, they are experiencing this through social media, but we have students who are from Palestine. We have students who have family in Israel. We have students who are directly affected by these world affairs, and it touches them. So it's not just that they are, you know, abstractly looking at a war through their phone screens, but they are really experiencing this deeply and personally. And they're aware of their fellow classmates who are experiencing this deeply and personally. So I think we really have to be aware of that. I think teachers, you know, there's such an emphasis now on test scores. And as a result, that really reduces learning to just a focus on discrete math topics and discrete English language arts topics, so that test scores can, you know, represent learning. And test scores don't always represent learning. What's more important is that scores in math and English language arts improve when all subjects are taught, yet cuts to education first cut the arts. They cut any sort of expression that the students have, like access to the arts, music, rhetoric, and then also science education, especially in the K-5 level, gets cut when there is an incredible adherence to test scores and to just improving math and English language arts. I think that even in the context of discussing global affairs, we really need to be looking at education holistically. Science, for example, I was a science teacher for many years, and now I'm a science teacher educator. Science encompasses math, language arts, history also encompasses math, language arts through statistics and through analysis and critical thinking. So these subjects really need to be emphasized. Science itself is a language art. There's so much language learning that occurs with the various sciences and language development. So by actually engaging students in all subjects and in societal affairs, we are already covering the important topics that are tested and that are, you know, used as metrics of learning. So we can't reduce and make learning into these discrete subjects. I think that is a huge disservice to teachers and their various abilities to master different subjects. And as you mentioned, you know, there's specific curricula that teachers need to follow in different school districts. Some of them are excellent, but either way, no matter what curriculum we have, they need to be adapted by the teachers to the needs of the students. So we really need to trust teachers to do the work of engaging their students in a version of the curriculum that's actually relevant and tailor-made for those students.
And before we go to break, Sanjay, you joined the Exploratorium Teacher Institute in San Francisco last June. And you spent 20 years as a public educator in the Bay Area. How did you and other teachers respond when administrators said you could not talk about what was happening in Israel and Palestine?
Unfortunately, personally, I froze. I didn't know what to do. Even though I was tenured and even though there would have been very few consequences for me to actually speak up and engage my students, I really was very hesitant. I did not wear kapiyas or any other indicators of taking sides on the issue, but I had to be very careful. What I did was I listened a lot. I was teaching eighth graders in 2023, and they were talking about the war frequently. And the strange thing too is that when the war broke out between the Ukraine and Russia, we never received guidance from administration, from upper administration, that we could not talk about the war. In fact, the school district sent out multiple letters of support to staff saying that, you know, students will probably be talking about the war and that that we should be, you know, supporting them. So it was very different when the war in Gaza came about. And so I think that many teachers are very hesitant to speak up and to just engage their students in critical thought. Again, teachers know how to bring discourse to their classrooms that provides opportunities for students to share what they're thinking without providing slant and without feeding particular opinions to the students. So I think it's very important for us to allow open forums for students to speak and encourage them, encourage different viewpoints and encourage them to unpack these. But I think, unfortunately, teachers who are, you know, worried about their jobs, teachers, for example, who are not tenured at their schools and who know that they could face consequences, are less likely to actually allow even neutral discourse in their classrooms because they're afraid of the repercussions.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Sanjay Makhijani, a former high school science teacher who spent 20 years as a public educator in the Bay Area. Sanjay is now a science teacher educator with the Exploratorium Teacher Institute in San Francisco, where he teaches science teachers and focuses on uplifting teachers of color. We're also joined by Alicia Sharif. Alicia has been a high school English teacher in Santa Cruz County for 25 years. She is currently working in Watsonville. And today we're talking about what it's like to be a teacher today. Very different than even 10 years ago. They're dealing with so many more issues in the classroom. And if you are a teacher or you've been a teacher and you'd like to share your experience, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. And talking about Gaza, we'll talk about the ongoing killing of journalists in Gaza. Last Sunday, Al Jazeera's prominent journalist Anas al-Sharif, along with five of his colleagues, were killed in a targeted attack on a media tent sheltering journalists in Gaza City. The Israeli military has killed nearly 270 journalists. We will also get the latest on gerrymandering. And then on Monday, we'll be joined by environmentalist Bill McKibben. He'll discuss his new book, Here Comes the Sun, A Last Chance for the Climate and a Fresh Chance for Civilization. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email your call at kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation with two teachers. We're talking about what it's like to be a teacher, an educator today. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Sanjay Makhijani, a former high school science teacher who spent 20 years teaching in the Bay Area. Sanjay is now a science teacher educator with the Exploratorium Teacher Institute in San Francisco. He teaches science teachers and uplifts teachers of color. Alicia Sharif has been a high school teacher, English teacher in Santa Cruz County for 25 years. She works in Watsonville. We have an email from a listener who says, I teach dance in SFUSD elementary schools. On the day of the presidential election, I overheard two children, 7 or maybe 8 years old, walking down the hall during recess. They were talking about Donald Trump. One said he's really popular. The other responded, he might go to jail. So they were 7 or maybe 8 years old. Our listener writes, teaching kids how to talk about things respectfully is one of the important roles of an educator. Alicia, based on the email we just got and what we heard from Sanjay about what they were told to not talk about, from the administration, what's been your experience in your school?
Oh boy, this is a, I could go on and on about this. Let's see, I would say pre-pandemic, our school was very much social justice oriented. We really embraced all sort of viewpoints and giving people a voice and identity to express and so on and so forth. After the pandemic, just about every aspect of teaching changed. And one of them that has increasingly become more challenging is being able to talk about social justice without it being something that is loaded. Last year, when I started my teaching year, I'm used to my students being very much, you know, just as I described. But I did experience a very different kind of student. And it was kids who, were using derogatory language about races that are not theirs. They were using and feeling that it was okay. So we had to have those conversations. That has to do with entertainment and music and what they're picking up on in social media. How is that okay? When it came to the president, there was a really big swing in the direction of my students who I've known for a few years now. I am a Republican. I am for Donald Trump. I had a student wearing a Make America Great Again hat on the day after the election. He was draped in a big American flag. It was very provocative. And so the teachers and the students were sort of shocked at, wow, we're really seeing some of the really outspoken feelings and, opinions around Donald Trump right here on campus, which was not usually something we experience. So I, for the first time, found myself really tiptoeing around things that I normally do not when it comes to talking about things like Israel or Palestine, or talking about, you know, sort of Black Lives Matter, those types of issues, LGBTQ issues. That's always been something that is open for discussion if students want to bring that to the table. I still continue with just making sure that I'm providing what they need to come to their own conclusions. So, for example, I will not stop teaching Night, which is about, you know, the Holocaust. But I also will continue, which I have done for almost 25 years, talk about what happened after that. Where did people go? And so the conversation comes up where they're going, oh, that's Israel, that's Palestine. Now we understand the full picture. And really what I talk about is humanity, and that each and every one of us is a human who has a lot of flaws and a lot of strengths, and that the flaws are ones that we can succumb to even if we think we wouldn't. And that does include violence, oppression, to the point of genocide, fear to the point of taking out a whole group of people and sort of dehumanizing them. And so we get into those conversations no matter what. And I did really have to leave behind any type of leanings in terms of political talk, because I could tell that in my classroom, there had been a big shift in terms of what students were feeling strongly about. So I thought, wow, this is a new experience here, you know, on the West Coast, right down the street from Santa Cruz, which, as we know, is a liberal, very liberal place. So it's been very, very interesting. And this year, I feel like I just need to continue to teach kids about what we have the capacity to, you know, sort of foster in ourselves, all the good, you know, virtues of humanity, and then also the ones we really need to check ourselves when it comes to those flaws that we're kind of seeing everywhere, as obviously with our leaders, our world leaders. So it's tough to talk about what can we talk about? What are you allowed to say? What am I allowed to say? It's a new world. That's all I can say. It's shifting quickly. And I think all of us are experiencing that in some way or another, in whatever aspect of work or home or community or, you know, country. We're all experiencing large shifts, and it's certainly at play in our classrooms.
How did the students respond when their peer showed up with the Make America Great Again hat and wearing the flag?
You know, I was in shock myself. So I was struggling with my own emotions because I was really afraid. All I could think was, there is so much that is going to change. And I'm scared today, the day after the election. And I'm not sure if these students quite understand. I know that many of them don't understand what is coming. And so some of the kids found it really entertaining. I had one boy show me his phone and he said, look, and it was on TikTok. And he goes, look at this kid. And he had been filmed with his flag. It was another boy, actually. There were three of them wearing these flags. And it became humorous. It became popular. It became, I guess you could say, kind of scary. I've never had my classroom have the girls be so quiet and the boys be so vocal. And I'm not trying to bash on gender, but you know, we're seeing a trend in sort of this emboldened, you know, bravado that wearing the flag and being really big and loud and sort of quieting and silencing everyone else. I did feel like a lone voice in my classroom a lot, because I'm not the type of teacher that's going to just ignore it. I'm going to stand up for any kind of inequalities. Not that this boy didn't have the right. He absolutely has the right, and, you know, to do as he wishes. But that feeling, I think, for students who are sitting in the room who are terrified, it's a tough place to navigate. So my job is to make sure those kids who are quiet understand that they are seen by the adults, and that we understand that this could be scary for them. I don't know if that quite answers your question, but
no, it definitely does. I mean, again, this is a changing landscape for teachers, parents, students, with social media and what we're hearing from people in power, the masculinity, like you say, that I can understand that some people might think, I don't know what to say to this. And it can be intimidating, especially if you're young. Sanjay, what are your thoughts about what we just heard from Alicia? Are you hearing other similar stories from teachers you work with?
Yes, I certainly am. Again, I think that it is really sad that teachers are not being trusted as experts in their classrooms. I think that is a huge shift from before. You know, when I started teaching 21 years ago, we really didn't receive guidance one way or the other, but teachers were definitely more trusted at that time. And again, as Alicia said, like, things have changed extremely rapidly. And again, even in the second Trump administration, we're noticing changes that were not implemented before. So yes, I think, you know, on top of other challenges, we are just being not treated as experts. Again, we're, you know, even in terms of just curriculum, everything is becoming very standardized. Teachers are not asked to be creative and to bring in their own ideas and expertise and passions into the classroom, which is very different from before. I think the creativity of teachers was really valued, you know, even 10, 15, 20 years ago, for sure. So I think that that's really a disservice to our students. It's really a disservice to the expertise of teachers. And even many, many principals, many middle managers are really afraid of what the consequences are to them allowing teachers to be the experts that they actually are. So there's huge consequences to this type of censorship that's occurring. It's really scary, actually.
Sanjay Makhijani is a former high school science teacher who spent 20 years as a public educator in the Bay Area. He's now a science teacher educator with the Exploratorium Teacher Institute. He teaches science teachers and uplifts teachers of color. Alicia Sharif has been a high school English teacher in Santa Cruz County for 25 years. She's working in Watsonville. We could also spend so much time talking about mental health issues that you're seeing in school, absenteeism. This really came about during COVID. And I just wonder, you both have been at this for a long time, so you clearly still love teaching. Alicia, you've been doing this for 25 years at a time when, according to schoolsthatlead.org, 270,000 teachers will leave the profession every year for the next 3 years. What keeps you in the classroom?
That is a sad statistic. That does make me sad to hear. But to answer your question, there's a lot that is very meaningful. The things that I've loved in the past, I still love to this day. There's sort of no getting around the fact that when I'm in the classroom with students, we are humans coming together. We are bound to bond to an extent and to have a dynamic with each other for an entire year. The kinds of experiences I tried to create with them, being an English teacher through literature is actually my favorite way to go. Because of course we can explore characters and, you know, all that good stuff, themes and what have you. And that's when it gets really fun. It's challenging these days because students are very much needing to be, we need to find new ways to engage them. And as much as I don't want to do a dog and pony show for my students, at this point, I do feel like a little bit like I need to stand on my head or, I don't know, start breakdancing. I don't know what to get their attention because they're so stuck on the scrolling and, you know, being on their phones and what have you. But you know, once those bonds start to form and we really start to dig deep into, you know, the topics I love about teaching English, then that's when the learning starts to happen, the relationship starts to happen, the goofiness comes out, you know, the safe feelings come, you know, the kids start to feel safe. And, you know, it's, to me, it's very meaningful to work with kids and to work with other human beings and be part of sort of a collective effort, which is to educate. So I really love it. Watsonville High has a, it's quite a legacy school. There's staff members, they just keep coming back. They'll leave and they'll come back. We have a strong community. So that I have to say, I have enjoyed for many, many, many years. So that keeps me coming back. I am trying to stay on top of sort of this whole AI. What am I going to do about, am I teaching kids and I'm just getting information from robots from them instead? Or am I actually getting them to learn things? It's definitely a new challenge for me, but I'm really trying to embrace it by learning about it as much as I can. And to be honest, I love learning. And so being a teacher is also about always learning. And that's what I want for my kids. So it's kind of like a little group effort, all of us together. We're in it together, as I say. So I do enjoy it. And oftentimes, you know, there's a saying that many teachers say, which is just shut the door and teach. And so that's essentially what I wind up doing is I'm going to shut the door, close the world out, and teach. And that's when things really are so worth it.
What about you, Sanjay? You were a high school science teacher for 20 years, and now you're an educator with the Exploratorium Teacher Institute. What keeps you doing this work?
I find it so incredibly exciting to support teachers at various stages of their career. We have teachers who come in, from teachers who've been teaching for 2 years to teachers who've been teaching for 42 years. And it is just so exciting to see their creativity, what they're doing in the classroom. As Alicia said, that, you know, many of them actually, despite what I said before, many of them are just shutting the door and teaching, and they are doing incredibly beautiful, thoughtful, engaging lessons. And what I really like is being able to help other teachers have ideas for how to do hands-on science in their classrooms. Again, with limited resources, it can be very hard, especially with, you know, I had actually no science budget for most of my years in the classroom. Our budget was exactly the same as other departments who didn't have to buy lab supplies and consumables. And so, you know, we really have to do our best on a shoestring budget. And part of what we do here at the Exploratorium is teach teachers how to expand upon complex phenomena using very simple materials in their classroom. And they also just bring so many incredible ideas to us too, and show us the great things that they're doing. So being able to work with other teachers who are creating and inventing and building community with each other is really exciting. That really keeps me doing it. I also am a product of this program. I did the Teacher Institute 19 years ago, and it inspired me to teach very differently. I completely changed my approach to science education after my second year of teaching, after doing the Teacher Institute. And it's a very wonderful program. As I said, I think one of the greatest things is not only just the science content that teachers learn, but really approaching science from a human-centered, student-centered perspective, and allowing them to build up on their instincts to have really engaging hands-on science, again, for like a very low budget. So it really provides teachers with the opportunity to do what they know how to do with less. And so seeing teachers be inspired and connect with one another is what keeps me inspired, especially when there's so many other obstacles. But teachers are, they want to teach. They want to have wonderful relationships with their students. And they are still inspiring students many years later. And you know, I think one of the greatest things was to hear from my students who've grown up and done incredible things, including becoming science teachers, and to hear how they are engaging in the world. I think that's the most rewarding thing, to have to be able to see students over time and just see what they're doing with their lives. And it's incredibly beautiful and inspiring to see that. To see that growth.
Oh, and so rewarding. We have an email from GS who says, I'm a retired English and composition teacher. I taught for 15 years at a private school, high school in Berkeley, and enjoyed great freedom in the classroom. Even then, in the 80s and 90s, most students did not have dinner with their parents or any shared meals where one might expect discussion and conversation. So teachers are vital to modeling examinations of ideas and respectful curiosity, whatever the subject they teach. We all need examples of courage and kindness. Thank you for that beautiful email, GS. Final thoughts from both of you. Given that so much is changing in the classroom, Alicia, what can the public do to support teachers?
Well, I suppose one thing that would be really wonderful is if you are paying attention to what is happening at your schools. It really helps, as you know, even being a voter, right? Or making a phone call to your representative. We need to do that in our schools too. Even if you don't have school-age children, sort of paying attention to what is happening in our educational institutions, because it's an incredible feat that across the nation right now, all kinds of kids are walking to school and getting to school all at once, and teachers are starting up their classrooms. And it's amazing that we're all doing this all at once. And so every community is touched by education in many ways. And so, you know, sort of keeping a finger on the pulse as to what is going on in your community, and is there anything that you would want to sort of chime in with your voice? That would be very important. The second I would say is, you know, if I don't experience this at my school, but I'm just going to say this for many of my teacher friends in other areas that do, we need to go easy on teachers. Many, many teachers, the last thing that they are able to handle is a parent who is expecting everything from the teacher. And we are simply just humans. And so we're doing the best that we can with what we've got. And that's all I would say to families and parents is don't forget that teachers are just human, and we are working our butts off and just trying to do the best we can.
Alicia Sharif has been a high school English teacher in Santa Cruz County for 25 years. She works in Watsonville. Sanjay Makhijani is a former high school science teacher who spent 20 years as a teacher in the Bay Area. Sanjay now is a science teacher educator with the Exploratorium Teacher Institute in San Francisco, where he teaches science teachers and focuses on uplifting teachers of color. Alicia and Sanjay, thank you so much for your important work, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we will definitely continue to do education shows. We will do another show with teachers and students the next time they're on break. And if you have any show ideas or guest ideas, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks to Johanna Miyake for producing today's show and Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.